Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back. I was just texting somebody during our quick break trying to beat the clock, and I did. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. Interesting. You know, Cyrus, when you think about the dinosaurs, I think nowadays when you think about the dinosaurs, you think about that asteroid that they say wiped out life. Well, at least all the dinosaur life, like 66 million years ago, that an asteroid hit the Earth. Maybe that's where the Gulf of Mexico came from. Maybe that was all land. It just got blown to smithereens. And the Gulf of Mexico is where it hit. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. But check it out. CNN's got an interesting story. A tiny fragment of that asteroid that they say hit the Earth 66 million years ago. They think they found a piece of it encased in amber. This is a NASA discovery. It's one of several finds at a unique fossil site in the Hell Creek Formation in North Dakota. It has preserved remnants of the cataclysmic moment that ended the dinosaur era. The fossils unearthed include fish that sucked in debris blasted out during the strike.
Whoa.
A turtle impaled with a stick and a leg that might have belonged to a dinosaur that what? Witnessed the asteroid strike.
Wow.
The story of the discoveries is revealed in a new documentary called Dinosaur Apocalypse that features naturalist Sir David Attenborough and paleontologist Robert De Palma. It's on PBS if you're interested. They basically are looking at these things and using their scientific tools and methods. They're able to sort of date these things, and they date it back to the time of this cosmic cataclysm. And we may have some artifacts from it. Isn't that interesting? In amber.
That's incredible.
And they have pictures too. If you I don't know if you posted the article yet.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'll get this posted.
There's a dinosaur leg.
There's a dinosaur leg. Yeah. I don't know what else it'd be.
Well, it makes you wonder what happened to the rest of the dinosaur.
How big?
And why did the leg survive? If the whole Earth got destroyed, how did this leg survive the apocalypse? The dinosaur apocalypse.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is interesting. And it reminds me of that scene in...
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where they show the, what was it, like a tsetse fly embedded in amber?
Yeah, like a mosquito.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah, it is interesting. So maybe for the kids who are homeschooling or doing science projects, that might be something fun for them. And you'll find that article with the pictures, etc., on the show website, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Just look in the lower left and you'll find it there. Let's get to the phones. Let's go to Lisa in Austin, Texas. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. We homeschool, and we were reading the readings this morning, and my 14 and 16-year-old were discussing, and they said, "Mom, do people name their kids Jesus?" And I said, "Well, it's not very popular in the English-speaking world." I said, "But I know plenty of Jesuses." And so then we were discussing, "Well, why is that?" And I said, "I'm not sure. Why is it acceptable in the Hispanic-speaking world to name your child Jesus, but in the English-speaking world, most people wouldn't say name their kid Jesus?" Right. And I said, "Maybe Patrick Madrid will know."
Well, I'll venture a guess, and I think you have already probably, you know, thought about the same thing that I'll say, and that is it's just not customary. So in English-speaking countries, and it may be the case in others as well, it's just not customary to name your child Jesus. It's not customary in Italian, so Italy. It's not customary that I'm aware of anyway in France or Germany. So it's not just the English-speaking countries. It's just... In my experience, it's not something that you see done, and I suspect it's because it's out of reverence for the name of Jesus and out of reverence for Jesus himself. And I could easily see why people would be skittish about it, because they would feel like, well, if I name my son Jesus, would that be kind of flippant, or would it be like, what if you have to shout at your kid and you have to shout that name, you know, or, you know, to say, Jesus, be quiet, or, you know, Jesus, stop hitting your sister, or, you know what I'm saying? It would be weird and odd. And I don't know if in Mexico, you know, I mean, my family is from Mexico on my dad's side, so 100% Mexican, and it's never something that has ever bothered me in Spanish, so I can easily imagine how it would bother me. And I wouldn't, maybe bother is not quite the right word, but it would be odd in English to say Jesus, because it's just not customary. I think that's the reason why. I don't know what other reason there might be, but it's just something that I think would be odd and probably uncomfortable. And that sounds like you were already onto okay. that thought already, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you. We'll go to Scott now in Union, Illinois. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Patrick. That's right. I'm not supposed to ask how you are.
they have all do it. It's okay.
I know. I apologize. Hey, I have a question for you on for the confessional. When you go to confession, how specific do you need to be for your sins? You know what I mean?
Specific enough that the priest understands what the sin is. So if you said, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 1 month since my last confession. I committed a sin of unchastity. That's not really specific enough. You would need to be you need to specify a little more clearly what the sin was. Or if you said, bless me, Father, for I have sinned, I committed the sin of theft. Well, that's not really specific enough. Did you steal $1,000? Did you steal a pack of gum? So obviously the gravity will depend upon how much you're talking about. So whereas you don't need to give gory details, you don't need to give too much information, it's important, though, that you're specific enough that the priests understand what specific sin you're confessing.
Okay. Yeah, that was my main question there. And then also I had one side question that I wanted to ask. Why do they, when I say they, why do they, I mean the media, I think the word abortion is a very candy-coated term for murdering the unborn. If Republicans and everybody that is against abortion would just simply switch and never say abortion again and always say murdering the unborn, I think more people would come to realize how wrong it is. It's kind of like a candy-coated phrase. I think if you just made it what it is, really is, that it takes a life 100% of the time, that would be more, what do I want to say, more to get the job done correctly. That would be, I can't think of the word, but.
I understand. So in other words, you're advocating for not using a euphemism or not using a word okay. Well, I understand your point. And to some extent, I agree with you, but I would offer this for your consideration. The term murder has a certain legal definition that people would argue that because it's legal, therefore it can't be called murder because it's not technically murder. Yes, you're killing. All right. Oh, ma'am, I guess maybe that might be a human being, whatever they'll say. But it's not murder because it's legal. So it is a kind of a technicality that what you're talking about hinges upon. And think about this by way of parallel. Capital punishment, and even those who are adamantly opposed to capital punishment, when they refer to it, they don't refer to maybe some do, but generally speaking, you don't really hear people who are opposed to capital punishment refer to it as murder. Rather, they refer to it as an unjust execution. And so they may be opposed to it, just like you and I are opposed to abortion. And I don't even want to get into the discussion about capital punishment and how the church has moved so strongly in the direction of saying no to it. But that's a separate topic. But the point is, we wouldn't talk about capital punishment as murder, strictly speaking, because it's legal. We could oppose it. We could disagree with it. We could want to see it abolished. But it wouldn't, technically speaking, be murder. And I think that may be the sticking point for what you're advocating. to use a different term that's more specific, I'm in favor of that, because I think abortion maybe has lost the shock value for what it really is. But it might be a real uphill climb to get people to say, to call it murder, even though we recognize it as a form of murder. It is true. I think you're going to have a lot of people who say no because it's legal. You see what I'm saying here,
okay,
Scott?
So you'd be better off saying killing the unborn than murder. Would be more...
Mm-hmm. Because that is true. Killing. That is true. Yeah, you are killing an innocent human life. And that there's nothing wrong with saying that. Not that I'm saying that... And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's wrong, quote unquote, to say that it's murder. What I'm saying is, here's why that's probably not going to catch on. That's the point I'm trying to make here. But if you say to kill an innocent human being, that's entirely true. That's very accurate. And it also removes the euphemism, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a euphemism that bothers me. I couldn't think of the word, but yeah, that's what it is. It bothers me that people that are so pro-life still call it abortion, because I don't think you're going to change people's minds that are pro-abortion, or that are on the fence, I should say, if you don't call it for what it really is. I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of get angry at the media when I just say killing the unborn or murder. I say murder, but because I look at it as God's law, and according to God's law, to me, that's murder. But I know in America here, we got to go by the elected, the elected law.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, no, I was just saying we got to go by, because you can't combine church and state according to our laws. But
what I'm trying to say here is, you can hold that view, and I share that view with you, because the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill, that extends to murder. So it doesn't extend, for example, to the battlefield. So if you're a soldier and you are being shot at on the battlefield and you shoot and kill an enemy combatant, that's not murder. You didn't murder anybody, and that doesn't violate the commandment, thou shalt not kill. So my sense is that understanding the context here will help achieve the goal that you're looking for, which is for people to face up to the reality of what abortion is. My sense is that if you use the term murder, a lot of people are just going to shut down, and they won't even listen to the point you're trying to make, because they're going to say, that's not murder. It's legal. Just like that's not murder if you're a soldier on the battlefield. And they may just stop listening to you. So if you can use a different way of talking about it that gets the point across but doesn't have that thought-stopping connotation, it seems like that would be more effective. That's what I'm driving at.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make one point. My brother-in-law said, because of the way the laws are written, if Roe versus Wade becomes against the law, his wife had a miscarriage, and apparently he said the dead baby would have to pass naturally in him, because under legally, then the doctor could not go in and remove that baby.
Yeah, that's
even
not
though it's
true.
Not living.
Yeah, that's actually a misrepresentation of these laws, like the law in Texas, for example. So there is obviously we all know there is an intentional abortion in the case of a surgical abortion or a chemical abortion, etc. But in medical terminology, sometimes it will, and I don't think sometimes, I think it just as a matter of course, will refer to a natural, spontaneous loss of the child through miscarriage. Also, it is referred to as an abortion. But it's not an abortion that's intentional. So the way the laws that I've been looking at, like in Texas, for example, read, it does not say that a woman who has a miscarriage and now that the remains of the pregnancy have to be removed, that is not something that is against the law. It's where you intentionally kill the unborn child that is against the law.
Okay.
So this is, to my mind, it's just not that you're doing it, but other people are trying to say, well, then that affects all the miscarriages and all. No, it doesn't. Those are not part of
it. All right, I'm glad you...
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that, Patrick.
Happy to, Scott. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's go now to Denise in Queens, New York. Good morning, Denise.
Yes, hi, good morning, Patrick. So I was reading something from Catholic Answers that said homosexuality is a temptation, like anything else, like pornography or prostitution, adultery. I've always thought of it as, you know, they're just born with this, you know, attraction to the same sex for whatever reason. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I mean, I haven't read it, so I can't really comment upon
it. No, I've just read you. That's exactly what it says. So I was thinking, what do you think about that?
Well, I try to think with the church on this issue, and the church, if you consult the catechism, it speaks very clearly about how the homosexual inclination is a disordered inclination. It's not rightly ordered. And so to have sexual attraction to the same sex is not normal. And so because it's disordered, there's a problem with it. Now, there are different ways of looking at this. One would be the inclination itself, and you said homosexual feelings, and maybe that's a quote from the Catholic Answers article. That may be another way of saying homosexual inclination, but the church says that's disordered. And so I'm not sure what you're asking me. How do I feel about it? What do I think about it? Can you be a little more specific?
No. What I'm saying is, I'll read the exact thing. People with same-sex attraction are suffering a particular form of temptation, but everyone suffers temptation. Because I've never thought of it as a form of temptation. I just thought of it as something they just, you know, they, for whatever reason, they feel that way. Obviously, I'm Catholic, so I'm not for that. I just never thought of it as thinking of it as a form of temptation. I think it was an interesting, theory.
Well, okay, fair enough. So I am heterosexual. So my whole approach to life is that I am attracted to the opposite sex. Now, that's not a temptation. I don't feel tempted when I go to the grocery store, and as a man, I'm bebopping around the grocery store, and there are women all around me. And if, you know, my life were different and I were single or looking for a wife or something, that I would be attracted or seek to marry a woman. That's not a temptation. That's just the normal. It's the normal inclination that a heterosexual person has. If I were bebopping around the grocery store, and I happen to spot in a very attractive woman, and then I start ogling her and thinking about her in impure ways, that would be a temptation. In other words, that would then become something that I would be tempted to act upon. And so it is true. Heterosexuals have temptations. Homosexuals have temptations. But the distinction, and maybe this is what you're driving at, is that the heterosexual identity is not a disordered inclination. It's a natural inclination. Homosexual orientation is disordered because it's not ordered toward what the natural law, for example, reveals to us, that even in our very bodies, that we are intended for certain goals, certain purposes. And to use your body in a way that is contrary to what it's tending toward or aiming for is disordered. And I think maybe that might be the subtlety that you're touching upon. Does that sound right?
I mean, I just wanted to know what you thought about that, you know, statement, because it was a different way that I've ever thought about it. And I just wanted to hear, because I love, you know, listening to your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to hear what Patrick Madrid thought about the thing of it as being a temptation, because it was, like I said, I've never heard that before. I just heard that, you know, like you said, I'd never heard the word necessarily disordered. I actually did say it in this book. It was the first time, but, you know, I understood that part. I just didn't think about it, is it as a temptation, so I wanted to get your thoughts on the temptation part. So that's very cool. And last question. So what do you think? Why do you think people are attracted to the same sex?
I don't know. I myself am not.
Okay.
I mean.
Yeah. I just wanted to. And one other thing. Did you, I just listened to your call. Did you say the church has gone to right for capital punishment and you don't agree with that? Or did I hear you wrong?
I think you heard me wrong. What I was saying is that, and I said it tangentially, that since the time of Pope John Paul II, the church has turned strongly away from capital punishment. So, but that's a separate conversation. I'm out of time, Denise. Thank you. I appreciate your kind words, and I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good song. All right, I want to share one thing with you before we get back to the phone calls. The number, by the way, 888-914-9149. Deepfakes, we've talked about that before. And thus far, at least, it's sort of been in the realm of video, photography, voice, and how sophisticated the deepfake programs are now that it's virtually impossible. And I think it will soon become impossible to really tell whether this is an actual photograph or an actual video or an actual audio clip of somebody or if it's been deepfaked. But it's now getting into the area of biometrics. So like, okay, sorry, so give you an example. When you go to an airport, you know how more and more now the airports will have these little kiosks that say clear. You've seen those, like little white kiosks that say clear. So you've got the where you go in to go to security, and if you stand in the long line, it's because you're like everyone else. You've got to be checked thoroughly to go through.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Well, then they have pre-check, which I've had for years now, and that really speeds things along. And you go and you have an interview, and you give them some private information. They do a background check on you, and then you just sort of whiz through these.
Must be nice.
It is nice. I never want to go back, honestly. And I made that decision. I'm willing to. I mean, the government, if they want to know, if they want to like run a credit report on me or see where I live or, you know, they can see it anyway, as far as I'm concerned. So when I did the pre-check, I thought to myself, what's the real cost here? I'm authorizing them to know about me, and there's really nothing exciting there to know. So I don't care. And I've had pre-check for, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 years, whatever it's been, and I really love it. But there's another thing called Clear, and it's one of maybe a few different things. This one is biometrics. So I was at an airport, and I think it might have been Phoenix, and there's a long line, and even the line for the pre-check was long. And so this representative from Clear comes over and says, hey, do you have an American Express card? I said, yeah. He says, well, did you know that by having an American Express card, your membership in Clear is paid for as like a perk, you know, when you have that card? I said, okay. And he said, and so you don't even have to, you wouldn't have to pay anything, but we can sign you up and then it'll be even faster. You don't have to show ID. You don't have to do much of the things that even pre-check people have to do. And I said, okay, what do I do? So he says, come over here. And I put in my email address, put in my information. Before I know it, it's scanning my eyes. So there's like a built-in camera thing in there. And he says, stand here. And I think I had to give like a thumbprint and fingerprint. But that didn't bother me either because my fingerprints are already in the FBI archives. When I was a young guy, I got a job for a short time because they had layoffs, but I got a job working at a bank. And Nancy and I were just getting married at this time. So I had a chance to work at a bank. And the very first thing they did, the very first day, is they said, okay, everybody who works at the bank, they have to do a full panel of fingerprints, palm prints, fingerprints, everything. And I said, okay, whatever. So I knew from that moment forward, if I ever wanted to think about a life of crime, that door was closed to me, because my fingerprints are in the database. So I didn't care when they're getting my fingerprints. It didn't matter. Then they're scanning my eyes. And then I realized, uh-oh, that's biometric. That's now in the database. It wasn't there before, but now it is. And here's what I'm getting at, Cyrus. At first, I had a twinge of concern. At first, I thought, oh, darn it. You know, why am, like, now I'm in that system. But then every time after that, when I would go to the airport, and I'd see all these, you know, these poor people waiting in line for a long time. And I would just walk up to this thing and it scans my eyes. And then I walk over to the guy, show him my boarding pass, and I'm through. It's like super easy. So it was a trade-off. And that's why this story I thought was interesting, because researchers have found that biometric tests that are used by banks, now this is not airports yet, but by banks, cryptocurrency exchanges and things to identify you using your eye scan, for example, they can be faked by deepfake technology. That's where this whole thing is going. In a report published on Wednesday, researchers at Sensity, a security firm focused on deepfake detection, demonstrated how it was able to bypass an automated liveness test by using AI-generated faces. Commonly known as Know Your Customer or KYC tests, such verification processes often ask users to provide photographs of their identification as well as their face. A liveness test is then used to capture the user's face in real time in order to match it to their selfie and identification photo with photo recognition, facial recognition software. So this company, they utilized a wide array of industries, including banking, fintech, I'm not sure what that is, insurance, crypto, gambling. So they looked at all these different things. And they said that despite its widespread adoption, active liveness checks are weak against deep fake attacks. The reason is that real-time deepfakes can be reproduced faithfully with facial landmark movements of the people who are doing this. And there's a bit more to it, but it's like another wrinkle in the whole deepfake thing, where it's becoming even more now possible to simulate or impersonate people and to beat these systems. So I wonder if the clear kiosks in airports may eventually, who knows, maybe there'll be something they'll have to change about that. But these are things that we never used to have to worry about, Cyrus. And now you do.
Yes, bizarre. What a... Who could have guessed this one? I mean, it's wild.
Yeah, it is. So not everything that glitters is gold, and not everything that appears to be, you know, what it looks like is necessarily true.
These criminals are so they're geniuses. But if they're so smart, why not use these powers for good? If they focus on doing something good for the world, they'd be able to accomplish, if they can accomplish this. Like, I watched the new Mandalorian thing, and it's got Luke Skywalker in it. It's got Mark Hamill. He looks like he's 30 years old, but it's pretty apparent that it's a deep fake of his face, right?
Okay.
Disney can't get it right, but this criminal, these criminals can.
He might be able to, he or they might be able to get some high-paying jobs with Disney.
There you go. Let's hope.
But there's probably a lot more money to be made,
I guess so.
You know, in the world of crime. Not that they should be. But yeah, it's interesting. And as the more this grows, the more of an issue it's going to be that we should keep an eye out. And that's the reason I bring it up, just because we should, as Jesus said, watch and pray. Watch and pray. Let's go to David in Hammond, Indiana. Hello, David. Hello, David in Hammond, Indiana.
Bueller.
Yeah.
Hello there.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Yeah. Hello.
All right. Hello, we'll come back to David. Let's go to Josefina in Chandler, Arizona. Hello, Josefina.
Hello, Patrick. I had a comment in regard to your people in Mexico, primarily, or Latin American countries, naming their children Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And but not in English, Jesus. And one of the things that made me reflect upon is that we kind of differentiate that culturally, and maybe has grown into the culture. But if we say Jesus, we almost refer to a human being because of the name Jesus being so common. But if we want to refer to Jesus, we sometimes just use the word Jesucristo or Cristo. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking about God. So I just kind of wanted to mention that because it was very particular. And I thought, yes, what is like that? You know, and I live in the United States now for 30 years, but I grew up in Mexico. And then I started reflecting upon the fact that we have a way to differentiate. We're talking about God, or we're talking about a human. So I don't know if it's interesting or not to you.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
That's what I kind of experienced.
That's a good point. Yeah. What part of Mexico are you from, Josefina?
I'm from the central part of the country between Guadalajara and Mexico City.
Oh, okay.
And so, yes, I live in Arizona, and it's like 1,300 miles. I have done it once, but usually I fly there. But yes, you know, so there's little subtleties, I guess, that the culture develops and the church develops to kind of make that difference. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think nobody hesitates to call their child Jesus, you know, because if we are going to talk about God, then we say Cristo or Jesucristo, the whole name. And then we know we are referring to God and not to a human being. So anyway, I thought it was interesting, the cultural thing and what how things evolve and happen in some cultures and not in others.
Indeed. That's very interesting. So, yeah.
But I'm a long-time listener, seen you in person many times when you've come to the Phoenix area. So keep up the good work. It is wonderful that you guys are there, and I wanted to congratulate you for so many years of so much devotion and dedication to our church.
May God bless you
and your family.
Thank you. Kind of you to say so, and I appreciate your being a faithful listener. Thank you. Always love going to Arizona in the wintertime. Going to Phoenix in July, different story. Let's see if we can get back to David in Hammond, Indiana. Hello, David.
Yes. Hi, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
I have some health issues. I have a little bit of a blockage in my heart because I had a heart catheter done, which is real late when they do it, and I can see it on the large screen. Cardiologist.
His wife's a cardiologist.
And my question is, what do you have to go through? Do you have to go through your parish priest first in order to go to Lourdes, France? And
take part
of the waters? Or do you have to be on a long waiting list?
No, you just go. You go to Lourdes, and when you go there, they have people who are tasked with helping the pilgrims who are coming from all over the world, and they will guide you and help you get ready to go down into the waters. But all you have to do is show up, and they'll handle everything from that point forward. But there is no
which I thought was a great film.
It was a great film, yeah, very inspiring. So, yes, if you wanted to go and take the baths and see if maybe God has a cure in store for you, it would be easy for you to do. Just go there, and the people who are there at the shrine are experts at taking care of the pilgrims.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I hope it works for you, David. I really do, and I'll say a little prayer. And, so I hope that that's something that you can do, God willing. And the story, for those who don't know, The Song of Bernadette is the movie that David just mentioned. That is a Hollywood, back in the days when Hollywood could really produce a cool movie about the Catholic faith, the story of how Our Lady appeared to Bernadette Soubirous, a little farm country girl, and appeared to her and told her, "I am the Immaculate Conception." And this would not have been known by her, because the definition of the dogma of the Immaculate Conception didn't take place until 1854, I believe it was, by Pope Pius IX. So there's a tremendous backstory here that has to do with the persecution that she experienced from her friends and family, but ultimately this miraculous spring of water that Our Lady told her, start digging in the ground here. And she started digging with her hands. And little by little, this spring opened up. And now this is like a raging torrent of water, and it has been ever since then. And many miracles have been attributed to those from those who have gone down into these waters. And I think that there's a catalog of maybe, 100, maybe more by now, scientifically inexplicable miraculous cures of people who were either deathly ill or they had some terrible physical malady, and it was healed, in some cases instantaneously, and the stories abound. And also, Saint Bernadette's body is incorrupt, so she is her body is still as it looks as if she were asleep after all these, you know, nearly, what would it be now, over not quite 200 years. So that's a miracle in itself. So it's a fascinating story, and that movie, The Song of Bernadette, tells it to you. So you can get that on probably Amazon Prime, I'm guessing. I'm coming right back, so please stay right there. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, longer. Let's do it.
I'm your huckleberry.
Isn't that a daisy?
Isn't that a daisy?
Back to the phones. Chris in New York, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question, actually, just bouncing off of what you've been talking about earlier with regard to sharing Netflix passwords, and you mentioned Napster.
Yeah.
I was wondering about YouTube, specifically with regard to, you know, you can go on YouTube and just watch all sorts of videos, a lot of which aren't put there by the people who own them, like, say, anything from, like, a concert DVD to even, you know, I think in a lot of cases, Catholic material. You know, is there anything wrong with watching videos if someone else, you know, other than the person who owns it, puts it on YouTube?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure if I have the answer, but here's my initial reaction to it. And that is that if it is a copyright infringement, so let me think this through. So let's say it's a movie, and the studio obviously doesn't want the movie to be out in the wild for free, and yet somebody posted it on YouTube. So there's obviously a responsibility on the part of YouTube to look for those things and take them down. Also a responsibility on the part of the studio that is asserting its copyright. If it doesn't assert the copyright, if it doesn't protect the copyright, that really weakens its claim on that. So not that would exonerate somebody from watching it for free, but I think those circumstances might make the person, so you, the viewer, looking at something on YouTube, I think that might make your culpability probably greatly diminished, maybe nothing at all, because you could in good faith assume that if this, what appears to be copyrighted material is on YouTube, that it's there with at least the tacit permission on the part of the copyright holder, because these big companies, I mean, they're very vigilant about guarding their copyrights. And so if it's on YouTube, you could, I think, rightfully assume, or you could at least reasonably assume, that it's therefore not something that you're infringing upon a copyright, because YouTube is allowing it to be there. And the company itself apparently is allowing it to be there. Therefore, that's sort of like tacitly giving permission for you to watch it. That's how I would approach it at first glance. I'd like to think more deeply about that. But if it were outside of YouTube, let's say it was on some other setting, let's say it's on some guy's random website, and he downloaded a movie and he put it there. Well, then I don't think you have that cover, because you can't say, well, the studio didn't go after him. Maybe they just don't know it's there. But for something like YouTube, I think it would be sufficiently possible that it's there and they're allowing it to be there. Therefore, I don't think it would be necessarily sinful.
It appears we must redefine the nature of our association.
All right. Okay, Patrick. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate
your welcome,
question.
Chris. Yeah, these are fascinating questions, and we can go in a lot of different directions. So I'm always glad when people bring up new wrinkles on these topics. Thank you for that. Let's go now to Edwards Air Force Base in California and talk to Mark. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Patrick. Sure. My question is, my godson lives across the country. He's in his early 20s, and I want to help him learn more about the Catholic faith. Okay. Can you recommend some kind of online catechesis program that I could buy for him that maybe he could access online?
Yes, there's the Symbolon program, S-Y-M as in Mary, B-O-L-O-N, and it is produced by the Augustine Institute. It's video-based. Now, I think in its earlier form it was DVD-based. They may have transferred it to, you know, digital video online, so I would check in with them. The Augustine Institute.
Oh, thank you. That sounds great.
Yeah. I would also encourage him to listen to Relevant Radio. You know, we're free and we're always available.
That's a good idea.
Send him the link to the Relevant Radio app. if you know if he's got an Android or an iPhone, just go to the iPhone, say to the App Store, and tap on the link, and then there's, you know, the button where you can share it, and just text him the link and just say, here's another resource you can listen every day.
Oh, thank you. That's a good idea. I had not thought about that. So I'll check out the Symbolon, and thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. And one more item, if you don't mind, Mark, I've got another resource for you. It's called the Aquinas Institute, and they have a big presence on YouTube. And in particular, it's the Aquinas 101 videos. They're all between, say, six and 8 minutes long. And it's a really good, very cleverly produced, well-produced series of videos on all the big picture issues about God, about the sacraments, about heaven and hell, what does it mean to have a soul, all the things you can imagine. And there's a Dominican friar who's explaining it in their illustrations and sound effects, and it's all really well done. And each video is compact, maybe, as I say, 8-9 minutes long. And so you could send him a link to the Aquinas 101 page on YouTube, and then he can just gorge himself on all those different videos.
Oh, thank you. That sounds like a great resource. I'm gonna do that today. Thank
awesome.
You, Patrick.
You're welcome, Mark. Nice talking to you, and thank you. How about Robert now in Sacramento? Hi, Robert.
Good afternoon. I've always wondered, as a amateur street evangelist, why, as an apologetic argument against Protestants, we don't use Jesus referred to the signs. If you don't believe me, believe the signs. And to forgive sins, I think. And we have, there was a recent short book, and I can't remember the full title, but it had miracles and something from Catholic Answers. And it went through about a dozen different scientifically proven miracles, and the proof was extensive. It's not like, you know, somebody argues that this person was healed, and then, you know, two or three people talk to him, and they declare that a miracle. The church goes through many exhaustive studies. Why don't we ever use those as an argument for the proof of Catholic Church, as opposed to arguing verse against verse?
Well, it is used, so it's part of the classical apologetics response or set of responses. So whether we're doing natural apologetics, or maybe more specifically Christian apologetics, making the case for Christ, the appeal to miracles is certainly one of those. And maybe what you're seeing, Robert, is that there may be a lot of people who haven't done much of that lately, but it is part of the church's set of proofs that we point to. And what's interesting is, if you want to know a little background, when St. Augustine was defending the church against the heresies of his day, excuse me, like the Donatists and the Docetists, that was one of the arguments they hurled at him, saying, well, if your church really is the true church, where are the miracles? You know, how come no one's being raised from the dead? How come nobody is being healed the way we see in the Bible? And his point was that miracles, although we do believe in them and we know that they do take place, they're no longer common. They're no longer prevalent. And his point, and this was written in the 4th century, he said, because they were no longer necessary the way they were necessary at the birth of the church, for people to realize that this indeed is coming from God. And now that the church has been established, the need for miracles has diminished. So he doesn't deny them, and he certainly doesn't say that we shouldn't appeal to them, but those heretics were using that argument against the Catholic Church. So that's an interesting wrinkle when you think about it. But we should appeal to those that are bona fide.
In the last 20 years or so, there's been like 4 or 5 Eucharistic miracles. There's been incorrupt bodies. You mentioned one this morning with Father Pio, St. Padre Pio. And, you know, most people aren't familiar with them. And if they were to look at the science behind them, that might be convincing enough to allow them to reconsider the Catholic Church.
I agree. Yeah, and thankfully, there are a number of really good books, like the book by Joan Carol Cruz called The Incorruptibles. It's a whole book on saints whose bodies are incorrupt, and it's filled with pictures, and it's very amazing. And thankfully, there are resources that do talk about these things. The problem is people are so glued to YouTube and TikTok and, and other forms of social media that often they don't even notice that these things are there. But that's a good point, Robert. Thank you. Let's go to Mary now in Illinois. Hi, Mary.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for your talking to me and for your program. I have a question. Actually, I have two. I know before you talked about baptizing a person, perhaps in an emergency situation. And right now, I'm looking at a family that has children, and the kids are not baptized, mm-hmm. and the parents are not really interested in the church because they tell me that anyhow, all I do is pray to statues. So, but the children. And I'm wondering, we were talking that perhaps we would want to, when they come over, my neighbor watches the kids. So she said, I really want to baptize these kids. And what do you think? And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, we could, I guess. I mean, we're trying to help them. And
well, let's pause there, Mary. And I do appreciate your zeal for helping these children. And they should be baptized. That's true. But you shouldn't baptize them unless there was some kind of medical emergency. In a case where the person's in danger of death, you do have the right or the ability to, and even maybe the duty to baptize that person if he wants it. But this is not that kind of situation. And the reason that the church would say to you, don't do that, is because when you are baptized, it is true that you receive sanctifying grace and all of your sins are forgiven, the effects of sin, elimination of original sin, all that does take place. But you now have these children who have a right to the other sacraments and to go to Mass and to participate in the life of the church that they will be prevented from having because their parents are derelict in their duty toward these children. And that's a pastoral problem that is a real one. And so the church says, no, better that you work with them, maybe give them a Bible, give them good Catholic books, and talk to them about Jesus and help them to the point where either their parents say, okay, if that's fine, if Mary wants to help you get baptized, that's fine with us, and a promise to make sure they get to Mass. I mean, there are ways that can be accomplished. The other possibility would be to just do this for as long as you can until they reach the age of 18 when they are legally able to do this for themselves. And then there's one other little detail here, Mary, and that is that there would be no baptismal certificate. So there'd be no official registered, verified statement that these children had ever been baptized. And if they were to turn toward the Lord and become Catholic, they would need that going forward, and they wouldn't have that. So that's a bit of a practical experience or practical reason. My advice would be love them, give them good example, encourage the parents, strongly encourage the parents, and see if maybe you can have an open door that way. But outside of an emergency situation where these children might be in danger of death, you shouldn't be baptizing them.
So we just wait and see if something can be answered, yeah. Can be done for the meantime.
Yes.
Okay, well, we were just trying to, I mean, we're looking at the situation in the home, and we were just trying to figure a way out, take them to Mass. I don't know if they would even want to.
Well, if the parents were agreeable, that would be a very meritorious thing for you to do, Mary. If you were to say, I'll take them to Mass. Can we get them baptized? And I'll take them to Mass. I'll make sure that they get their religious instruction and receive their other sacraments. And, you know, it couldn't hurt to ask because they just might say yes. And if so, then you're like their guardian angel helping them along the path to Jesus. And that would be a great thing. Anyway, thanks, Mary. I appreciate it. Let's go to John now in San Diego. Good morning, John.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. You know, morning. I just had a comment about the gentleman that called in and said we should change the language of abortion to murder. And I know you're probably going to be aware of this, but I thought it might be interesting for the listeners. It called mm-hmm. to mind, and many of us in California are familiar with the case about 20 years ago with Scott Peterson. It was an infamous case where he yeah. killed his wife yeah. and their unborn child mm-hmm. 8 months in the womb. And he was ultimately convicted of two counts of murder, second-degree murder, for the killing of his child. And you're right on, you know, how that murder has a very specific definition under the law in California. I think it kind of highlights just how illogical the law is on this issue. And, you know, in California, murder is indeed defined as the killing of a human being or a fetus. Mm-hmm. Although exceptions are made under that statute for where the mother, sadly, where the mother consents to the killing of the fetus, and how tragic that language of the statute is. But I just thought it was worth noting because that case was a big case, and it just highlights how, again, how illogical and irrational the issue is, particularly here in California where I live.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems to, and you're right, John, it seems to pivot on the question of, is the child wanted or unwanted? So if the child is wanted and there's a murder that takes place and an unborn child dies, then it's counted as a homicide. If the child is unwanted and the mother goes to the abortion clinic and has the child's life ended, it's not murder. And so these
and
circumstances.
How sad is that? Wanted or unwanted by the mother, because as Catholics, we all know that the child is wanted, of course, by God and you know, by so many others. It all hinges on the desire of the mother, which
is
just so sad.
I agree, John. I'm out of time. Wish I weren't, though. But thank you all. Thanks for listening. I look forward to being with you again right quick. And I'll be praying for you between now and then. Please do pray for me. God bless you.
Well, take some advice, Pilgrim.
Follow Patrick on Twitter @PatrickMadrid.